Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is Carrie Miller. Carrie, thank you for joining me.
I am very pleased to be here tonight.
I am pleased for you to be here as well. Fun tidbit, you are here because of a Doctor Who convention, which just blows my mind. It's not a Star Trek convention,
yeah.
It's a Doctor Who convention. But tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm a chemistry professor at Azusa Pacific University. It's in Southern California. And as I tell my students, I am a huge nerd. And they don't necessarily believe me until I tell them things like, I'm going to be on a Star Trek podcast, and I arranged it at a Doctor Who convention. And they tend to believe me at that point.
Also, I'm a chemistry professor.
Well, yes, that might be a tip off.
I did not take any chemistry in college. I was an English major, but in high school I had a chemistry course, and I went to Catholic school, so there was a priest who was teaching it, and he would always, whenever there was a ruckus in class, he would say, "Gentlemen, we must seek isotropy," and everyone was like, "What are you talking about, dude?" That's my chemistry fact. So you're a chemistry professor. You like Star Trek, I'm going to guess. Do you consider yourself a fan of Star Trek?
Absolutely. I am definitely a fan. I know you've asked people before on the scale of like 1 not seeing it, 10 wearing uniform to convention. I'd say I'm like maybe an 8 or 9 because I'm currently wearing my science blue hoodie at the moment.
Ooh, I have a command yellow hoodie.
Nice.
I'm not wearing
it. I really go in for the science blue, like as a chemist. Like, it just speaks to me really deeply that it's like, oh, here's this whole like uniform that is reflecting like how great science is. And so I really enjoy that. But yeah, I am a big Star Trek fan. A few years ago, my husband and I actually did a project for Instructables where you can put together a description of how to make something. And the thing that we made was a cat tree for our cats. Our cats are Savik and T'Pau, our two cat names. So, you know, another clue there. Mm-hmm. And
those are some familiar names.
Yes. The cat tree is two parts. One part is actually the Enterprise, and then the other part is a Romulan bird of prey from the original series.
Well, that is awesome. And we'll have a link to that in the show notes if folks out there want to build their very own Enterprise or Romulan bird of prey cat tree. And why wouldn't you? I don't have cats, but I like cats. I just live in a building that doesn't allow cats, so sadly I can't have a cat. Although I guess I could have a cat tree.
Nothing is stopping you from having a cat tree. You could just put picture frames on it.
That's right.
Hang your Star Trek ornaments so they could be displayed year-round. All sorts of options.
Well, my wife has put the kibosh on displaying our Star Trek ornaments year-round, so I don't think she would appreciate if I built a Star Trek-themed cat tree. Who knows? Maybe I'll slip it under somehow. I'll fool her. I'll tell her it's a coffee table or something. So you're an 8 or 9, so you're a bona fide Star Trek fan, and I think that possibly... I don't want to blow your mind here, but I think having a Star Trek themed instructable might make you a 10 on the Star Trek fan category. Nothing wrong with that.
That is possible. I'm definitely willing to entertain that possibility.
Much like, hosting a Star Trek podcast kind of puts me at a 10, even though I've never been to a Star Trek convention. I would like to go to one, but it's never happened. Let's talk about, so you went to a Doctor Who convention. So if you had to pick, between Doctor Who or Star Trek, what would you pick?
Oh, that's hard.
I ask the tough questions here on Random Trek.
You do. You know, I like them for different reasons. I like Star Trek because I feel, you know, it has so much of the Star Trek has that optimism of the future. And it's really, it's really set around this possible future and sort of striving for that, and that being kind of a goal, and it's setting it up as this obtainable goal. Whereas Doctor Who, the appeal of Doctor Who is that it can be anywhere in time or space. If I could only have one. Oh, that's so hard. That's so hard. If I could only have one, it would be Star Wars, actually. What?
That was from out of left field.
I love Doctor Who. I love Star Trek. I also really love Star Wars. That was my first geek love. Mm-hmm. That's where I fell in love with science fiction. And so that always has a special place in my heart. But yeah, I love science fiction. I love the way that it, you know, really turns a mirror on our lives and our experiences here and kind of asks those questions of, you know, what if things were different? Is it possible to like try to strive to be something else? Mm-hmm. And I think that's really cool.
Yes. So I think that's an acceptable answer. It's an unfair question. So that's fine. And I give people grief for being Star Trek, Star Wars, or Doctor Who fans. But in fact, here's the secret. I am both a Star Wars and Doctor Who fan. So the secret is out. Although I would pick Star Trek. If I could only have one, I would pick Star Trek. So let's talk about favorite series in Star Trek. What would you, if you had to pick, because I'm going to ask you to pick, what would you pick as your favorite Star Trek series?
I think this is actually an easier question for me to answer. You know, I really do love all of Star Trek. Well, I love all of Star Trek, and I really quite like Enterprise.
So Enterprise is not your favorite series?
No, it's not. My favorite would be Next Generation. That's the first series that I really watched. And actually, when I got into it, I didn't actually watch the show. I read the books when I was in high school. I was a voracious reader, especially of science fiction. And so I was mostly reading the Star Wars books, but, you know, Star Wars and Star Trek books are going to be close. They group them at our library according to the show rather than by the individual authors. So there was a big group of Star Trek books sitting right next to the big group of Star Wars books, and I pretty much read all of them. And then I have a twin sister who's actually a physicist, and she and I would watch Star Trek and Farscape on our Friday evenings because that's how we would spend our Friday evenings.
That's how you roll.
Right. And so I would see just random episodes of Next Generation. And I really enjoyed it. But I didn't see it all in sequence until many years later, actually, when I was in grad school. My husband and I watched all of Star Trek in order of airing. So because we both realized that there were episodes we hadn't seen, and he's also a huge Star Trek fan. So at that point is when we watched everything. So Next Generation is my favorite. And then probably the original series. I really like Spock. He's probably my favorite Star Trek character
ever. Who doesn't like Spock?
Right. And particularly, like, I'm like, I just, you know, he's a scientist. I really like that aspect of him. He's just the best. So I really like original series. Then probably Voyager. I really like the Doctor on Voyager. I really like Seven of Nine. I really like Janeway. And then probably DS9 and then Enterprise, which sounds weird because I even admit that DS9 is probably the best Star Trek. It just isn't my favorite.
And you know that.
And I think it's.
Those are very, you know, people confuse the two, right? Because something can be, you can clearly say, okay, this one is much better than this other one, but I really have a soft place in my heart for this particular thing. So just because it's the best doesn't mean it has to be your favorite.
Right, exactly. And for DS9, like, I am absolutely willing to admit that it has really good quality of writing. The storylines are great. It's amazing that they really got into what serialized storytelling could be, you know, in a time when television didn't do that. And that's really remarkable. But none of the characters grabbed me the same way that, like, Spock or Picard or Data grabbed me from, you know, the series that I like more. So that's just, for me, that's just kind of how it works out. And then similarly with Enterprise, there's a fair amount of Enterprise that I do like. I just don't get the characters as much as some of the other shows.
I have a hard time naming the characters on Enterprise, and that's never a good thing. Especially when you've seen as much Enterprise as I have. They just kind of bleed into one another.
It took me, when my husband and I watched through it, it was the first time I'd seen Enterprise. I didn't watch it when it aired. And it took me about 2.5 seasons before I could tell Tucker and Malcolm apart.
they're tricky, I tell you. And I always forget good old Ensign Mayweather. I just forget that he exists.
Yeah.
No offense to him.
Yeah, so does the show.
It's true. That is the problem. He doesn't get much airtime. So before you actually got, sadly for you, an Enterprise episode, even worse, a first season Enterprise episode. Though I will say, I think this episode from the first season of Enterprise is probably higher up there than many of the other first season episodes. The Andorian incident. But before we get to that, I want to ask you a tough question about The Next Generation. Who is your least favorite character on The Next Generation?
Oh, my least favorite character on The Next Generation.
I've been asking people their favorite characters, but I want to
That's
I feel
so
like,
hard because there's so many characters I like.
See, that's why I feel like asking least favorite of your favorite series will give us an interesting insight into you as a fan.
Yeah. Oh, that's hard. If we only looked at season one of Next Generation, I would probably say Riker. But if we look at the whole, why can't I remember her name? It's just escaping me. The doctor from the
Pulaski?
Second season.
Dr. Pulaski.
Yeah, that's a cheap one though. Because,
that is kind of an easy out.
That's an easy out.
Although it is a valid, I mean, I like Dr. Pulaski, but she's no Dr. Crusher.
Yeah. When she intentionally gets Data's name wrong, that really bothers me. And I know it's supposed to bother me, but I'm like, no, writers, you don't understand. Now I really like Data is my favorite character on Next Generation. And
people should be nice to him. But enough about every other Star Trek franchise. Let's talk about Enterprise, and specifically the Andorian incident, which is kind of an on-the-nose title for this episode because it involves an incident with Andorians.
That was a slow day in the writer's room, right?
Yes, they couldn't think of something else. Now, I think that this episode is okay. I have some trouble with the central premise of the episode, and I feel like the twist is predictable. However, I enjoy Andorians, and I think that the opening of this episode might possibly be the best opening of any Enterprise show ever.
Yeah, I think that this episode benefits, or at least it benefited for me, from low expectations. Because when I saw that I had a season one episode of Enterprise, I was like, oh, how terrible is this going to be? And it didn't. And I'm watching, I'm like, wow, this isn't terrible.
This is mostly okay.
Little faint praise. But I agree with you on the opening. I think it does a really good job of establishing the monastery. And you see that it's Vulcans. And you get the atmospheric music. You know. And then they kick down the door.
Yeah, and then there are angry Andorians kicking down the door. And then you cut to the awful theme music. But those 40 seconds, it's a really short opener too, which makes it stand out as well, because usually they're a couple minutes, but this is just kind of like, here's some Vulcan monks, here's angry Andorians, that's it.
Yeah. And you know, it's now been several years since I watched any Enterprise episodes, and I had forgotten how much I dislike the opening. If you had asked me, what do you think of the opening of Enterprise? I would say, oh, I don't like it at all. But when it started, it was a visceral reaction. I was just, my whole body just shuddered. I was like, I forgot how much I don't like this song. But it's amazing. My husband likes the opening song. He likes it.
What's wrong with him?
Yeah, and I married him anyways, right?
Hopefully it wasn't your song that you danced to at your wedding, though.
No. He just appreciates, I mean, he made this point to me, he appreciates the fact that the lyrics are all about like striving and trying to obtain the, you know, going That's out true. And seeing the stars and all that. And
faith of the heart fits and
with
so
the
on.
Prize. And I'm like, right, I guess I can see that, but I can't get over, I just can't get over it.
I've said this before. I understand what they were going for. They didn't get it, for me at least. And luckily with streaming, I just skip over it. So that's the beauty of it. I remember how awful it is, and I just say, I'm not going to watch it. I'll skip over it. And it's not good. Now, this episode really is pretty simple, the story-wise. but it also, every time I watch Enterprise, the thing that surprises me over and over again is how much I dislike Captain Archer. And I don't know if it's just me, but I just don't like the way he does things. I don't like the way Scott Bakula acts as Captain Archer. He just annoys me all the time.
Yeah, it's he doesn't really rise to that level for me. I think I'm a little bit neutral towards Archer, but that may just be me not remembering enough details from Enterprise to say. he certainly pales in comparison to the other captains. You know, I know, like, even like someone like Picard, who initially was played like quite coldly and kind of warms up slowly over mm-hmm. the show. I love Picard. I love that he doesn't like children. I love that he is, you know, like really into his music and like archaeology and like all this stuff. Like, they take someone who is, you know, a little stiff, a little formal, and they make it a great character. And Archer, he just seems bland. Like, if you ask me to describe Archer's like personality or character, you know, I can easily do that for any of the other captains, but Archer is just sort of there.
Yes. If someone asked me that, I would say he likes water polo and he has a cute dog. And
there was the water polo thing, wasn't there?
Yes. He's a big fan of water polo.
Yeah.
Which seems like an odd choice.
Yeah. The dog makes up for a lot, though. You can cover a lot of mistakes with a
Porthos
cute dog.
Is super cute. So he gets points for that. Although I've said this again on another episode, that I find it kind of annoying that he would bring his dog with him, on like the maiden voyage of, Earth's, you know, best ship and, you know, waste resources trying to save his dog. Although I understand he's a pet and he loves his dog. I get it. People don't write and tell me that I hate animals. I don't, but I just don't think it's appropriate. Nobody else on the ship except for Dr. Phlox, and those are animals for, medicinal reasons, are allowed to have puppies or kittens or other things. So it just seems kind of weird.
It is. It is a little odd. At least they didn't allow children, which, again, I am totally willing to forgive them children on The Next Generation just because of how uncomfortable it makes Picard. So,
well, and so they spun that, right? That, you know, the Enterprise in The Next Generation is a ship of exploration and a peaceful mission. So family should be on board, even though it really makes no sense given how much danger the Enterprise gets into. You would think after like the first voyage, you'd say, maybe we should, if I were a crew member on the Enterprise and I had kids with me, I'd say to my wife, maybe we should leave the kids at home. you know, Q teleported us in, we met the Borg, and that seemed not great for the kids.
Yeah, it really seems like maybe they should revise their protocols, but, you know, it's Starfleet, it's a Federation.
Everybody's happy. They're optimists, and the kids are learning valuable lessons all the time about Borg implants. So this episode, like I said, is fairly simple. I do like the fact that the one thing that I will say about Captain Archer, or at least they tried to get with Captain Archer, is this feeling of excitement about exploration, and he's excited to go see stuff. And they open it up with, I think, what Trip and Archer are talking, and Trip is annoyed because they have the Vulcan star charts, and he thinks it makes their exploring kind of lame because it's already been explored, so why are they bothering? And Captain Archer excitedly points out that they had seen some protostar that wasn't on the maps, and so they are actually exploring. I thought that was great. Well, great may be a trifle much, but I thought that was good. Yeah. The fact that he was like, oh, look, this planet says it has a Vulcan colony on it. Let's go visit for no reason.
I was going to say, I thought that scene played nicely against the following one with Phlox and T'Pol.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Where they were talking about the mission of the Enterprise and how it was, you know, to go and explore and seek out the things that to humans were new, and how that fit in with the Vulcan philosophy. So I thought those two scenes actually complemented each other really well.
And I think that the T'Pol Phlox scene is probably the superior of the two scenes. But they do pair well in that scene because, you know, T'Pol is basically upset that they have to go to this Vulcan colony that she doesn't really want to go to, and they're going to annoy the Vulcan monks, and why do these humans who stink want to do this anyway? And Phlox has to remind her, like, doesn't your race have a saying about infinite diversity and infinite combinations and all that good stuff? And there is a great moment when he steals a piece of T'Pol's celery, and she is not very happy with that.
Well, I think it's partly it's a superior scene because it has Phlox in it, and he's the best character on the show.
Without a doubt.
I like him.
And sadly, I think that's his only scene in this episode. It's a good one, but I don't think he shows up anymore.
I don't remember. Is the whole Vulcans think humans smell? Is that really a thing? They kind of made it a thing in this episode, and I did not care for that as a thing in Star Trek. I'm just like, this seems unnecessary.
I was watching this episode with my wife, and she turned to me and said, is that a thing in Star Trek? Because they really do play it up. They have T'Pol in Enterprise does comment on that on several non-consecutive times. But in no other iteration of Star Trek that I'm aware of do Vulcans complain of human smells. So.
Yeah.
It's an Enterprise
thing. Yeah, I disagree with that choice from the writers. I'll put it that way.
And I will say that so the Vulcans as a race in Star Trek outside of Enterprise, when you think of them, you think of logic, you think of perhaps cold, distant, reasoning, unemotional, but they're always thinking about something, and they're deeply spiritual, right? Those are the things we know about Vulcans. And then we get Spock, who is the kind of prototypical Vulcan. And then all other Vulcans, main character Vulcans, are kind of faint. I wouldn't say faint echoes, but just trying to play Spock and giving it a different spin. So Tuvok on the Voyager is, a Vulcan in the vein of Spock, but he gives it his own kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think the challenge is that, you know, Spock's character, what made Spock's character complex is that he wasn't entirely Vulcan, but he wanted to be.
Right.
You know, he didn't want the human parts of his character, and that gave him that, you know, inner life, so to speak, of the character. And it just made him more complex and more interesting. When you have someone who is entirely Vulcan and buys into the Vulcan philosophy and the Vulcan culture, it's a little harder, I think, to do interesting things with them because they don't have that internal conflict that Spock had. So it's a challenge because they're following in the footsteps of someone who did such an iconic job with the role, but also had a role that just was inherently more complex than their own, I think.
Yes, no, I think that's totally right on. But my problem with Enterprise is not T'Pol as a Vulcan, but rather the treatment of Vulcans in general in Enterprise and the way they set them up. Because we know, right, so First Contact tells us that the Vulcans made first contact with Zefran Cochrane after he, they noticed his warp nacelle signatures or whatever. And then they kind of shepherded humanity into space. And in Enterprise, the Vulcans are kind of depicted as trying to keep a clamp, like, tamp down on humanity's space aspirations and will only give us a little bit of information and won't share the whole thing. And they're kind of underhanded, and there's this I don't particularly care for the way that they're portrayed. And in this episode in particular, spoiler alert, the Vulcans are lying, which is something that we are told for like 40 years of Star Trek history that Vulcans do not lie.
Right. So. Yeah. I think I see what they were trying to do with the Vulcans, where like in Next Generation, you've got the Federation, which is basically, I mean, it's not entirely human, but the face of the Federation is human and Starfleet, obviously human. And they're really set up as like the moral, like center of this part of the galaxy. And that isn't really questioned that much in Next Generation. And then in Deep Space Nine, it's questioned a lot, which is one of the strengths of DS9, I think, that you've got these alien outsiders who are kind of pushing back on the idea that that the Federation has, a monopoly on morality, right? And my the sort of trend I was thinking is when watching Enterprise is that I think they were trying to set up a similar dynamic where the Vulcans were the ones who are claiming that superior moral position, and the humans are the ones who are kind of pushing back on that idea. But I think the flaw, I think that's what they're trying to do. I think, again, it's a little bit of a failure in execution, because if it requires you to do things like having the Vulcans act in a way that is different from the rest of Star Trek canon, then you start to lose it a little bit.
Right. And maybe that might be not the right choice for your central character, because you have years and years of Vulcan knowledge, at least, you know, Star Trek fans do. And this is trying to upend that whole thing by being a prequel, right? So that we have that other complication that this stuff has all happened before all the Star Trek that we know and love. So you would imagine that no one would trust the Vulcans because they're not very trustworthy in Enterprise. And so I guess let's quickly go through this plot of this episode, because it's a very short plot and then we can just hop around. So yeah, they're flying past this Vulcan monastery. Archer says, why don't we visit the Vulcan monks? T'Pol says they won't like that. Archer says, too bad, we're going anyway. So T'Pol says, okay, let me look up the proper way to greet these Vulcan monks. And they go down in a shuttlecraft and visit the Vulcan monks. And they notice that the door seems to be broken. They let themselves in. Even though T'Pol says they shouldn't go in because they have to wait until the Vulcan master comes, but Archer's like, hey, I'm not waiting.
And he gave it all of like 1.5 seconds before he went in.
I thought that was kind of funny. And so he pushes open the door, he checks it out, and apparently the Vulcan master is just kind of hanging out in front of this screen, not moving. T'Pol has told Archer not to talk to the Vulcan master. She will talk to him, so she talks to the Vulcan master. He talks to her. They talk about Vulcan things, one imagines. And Archer kind of wanders around the shrine looking at stuff. He notices that an Andorian is crouching behind the screen, so he decides he's going to do something about it. He starts talking to the monk. Long story short, the Andorians are revealed. They capture Trip, T'Pol, and Archer, and throw them in with the rest of the Vulcan monks. The Andorians think that the Vulcans have a listening post here. The Vulcans say, no, no, no. We are but monks seeking enlightenment. But then there are many suspicious things, like there is one particular Vulcan who is very suspicious. He's like a very squirrely kind of guy. They have a secret passageway to their catacombs, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, I was just, the whole issue with the catacombs, and they're like, this is where we hold our most sacred relics, and then apparently let them be covered in cobwebs and dust. That was a little bit of a disconnect.
Only masters can go down there, so.
And they don't dust.
They don't dust. Masters, that's beneath Vulcan, whatever sect this is, masters. So yeah, there's this passageway in the catacombs that no one can go down. But then, through, as you might imagine, through some hijinks, they have to go down that passage, and they find out that, in fact, the reliquary is pretty much full of pottery that probably is worthless, but behind, and apparently Vulcans are duplicitous, but very poor hiders, because they cannot hide this giant metal door worth a damn. It's behind.
I don't know what you're talking about. It was behind a tapestry.
No one ever looks behind it. Yes, it is hidden behind a threadbare tapestry that falls down when someone walks next to it, revealing a giant door that seems out of place. And this is happening. Archer and Andorian and a random Vulcan are having a firefight in the reliquary, and the door is revealed. Archer, for some reason, decides that he should really open this door while people are shooting at him, so he opens the door. Lo and behold, it's a giant Vulcan listening post, although the people in the Vulcan listening post seem rather oblivious that this door has been opened and that people are staring at them.
I noticed that as well. They seemed too unconcerned.
Nobody cares. And then that's the end of the episode, really.
Yeah. You know, in one sense, the twist is not completely unexpected. I have to say, when I watched again, because again, it's been years since I saw it, I kind of kept thinking like, oh, that stairwell must lead to the long-range sensor array, right? And then I was like, but why would the Vulcans lie? Like, I was actually kind of stuck in the hole, but the Vulcans wouldn't lie about that. Why would they have any reason to have this long distance sensor array? So I suppose in that sense, the twist was quite effective because it happened. And I was like, oh, that is what they're doing. I was not expecting them to do that.
Dirty liars. And not very good at it either, which is another problem. Also, Andorians. I like Andorians a lot. Let's talk about the Andorians. And also, so the guy who plays Wayun plays, what is it, Sharn or something? I forget his name.
That's Tran. How I know him.
Yes.
Oh, I was watching it the entire time. And of course, I didn't bother to get on IMDb or something, but I was like, that guy is so familiar.
Mm-hmm. And so Wayun, a fantastic character.
Great character.
And Commander Tran also, this is his intro in Enterprise, and he comes up again. I enjoy him. He doesn't do much in this episode other than be angry and punch people, but that's kind of what Andorians do, so.
Yeah. I was gonna say, that's kind of an Andorian for you. I have to say I really did like the makeup, for the Andorians. I thought they did a really good job of, taking the makeup and improving it from the original series but with keeping it looking like the same aliens. Like they looked like Andorians. It was just better realized. And when Enterprise does that, I think it's successful. You know, like when it can use the advantage of better technology and better ways of making props and makeup and so forth, then I think that is good with still retaining the essence of the original.
Right. They're true to the spirit, but just make it better. And they do that. There are multiple times in Enterprise where they do that. I feel like they ruined Vulcans a little bit, but that's all right. The one thing I love about Andorians, the Enterprise Andorians, is that their antennas move slowly. I just enjoy that very much. It's a nice touch.
Yeah, a tiny detail. I like that the little inner bits of the tips of the antenna were slightly pink with them. Mm-hmm. Because it always bothers me when you have like full skin makeup that's like a different color, but then the inside of the mouth is still red. And maybe that's just like the scientist to me who's like, well, the reason we're kind of pink is because our blood is kind of red. And, you know, like, why would they have blue skin but then have pink mouths? And so, like, if their blood is supposed to be blue, these are the kinds of things that I think about when I watch science fiction. So to me, actually, that little bit of pink inside the antenna was like, oh, we also have some pink in us.
See, there you go. Somebody was thinking about that. And yeah, so I like Andorians. I like, so obviously Vulcans versus Andorians is clearly a good matchup, right? Because Vulcans are these logical, and especially the monks, right? They're peaceful. They say they have transcended violence. And it is unclear, to me at least, if all the Vulcan monks knew about the listening post or if it was just that one Vulcan monk who knew about it. I don't think the episode answers this question. But what do you think they all were in on it?
You know, that's a good point. I hadn't even considered that when I was watching it, but you think within the show that it would actually be fairly straightforward for them to keep the other monks unawares because they could just beam stuff down like directly to that chamber if they had the coordinates for it. So yeah, I actually would buy the fact that like maybe the one suspicious Vulcan knew, because if the others knew, they might have been a little bit more strategic in trying to keep the humans away from that knowledge.
Right, because the other monks pretty readily say, oh, we have catacombs and here's how you get to them. You would think they might not tell anybody about them. And I do like, the other thing I like about this episode is, so Enterprise rarely uses the transporter because it's a new technology and they don't really trust it. There's a problem that I both like this and think it's problematic. So, what's his name? Malcolm decides that they need to stage a rescue and beam down, and, you know, ambush the Andorians because Andorians don't have transporters either. So their tactics won't take that into consideration. But then the question becomes, why don't they just beam Archer and Trip and T'Pol up as opposed to beaming down to them? Which is not something I thought of as I was watching it, but after when I finished watching it, I was like, why didn't they just beam them up? There are only two humans there. The finding T'Pol could be a little tricky because they're a bunch of Vulcans, but she was the only woman Vulcan, so.
Yeah. I actually know she was actually the only woman on the planet. That's so true. None of the Andorians and none of the Vulcans, which is the kind of thing I notice him just sort of like, really? But
and then there's the super creepy Andorian who is leering at T'Pol.
Yeah. Speaking of the choices I disagree with on the writer's part, that was probably my least favorite thing in the episode. I'm like, can we just have one episode where there are like hostages or something and there isn't a creep? Like, just once in my escapist science fiction fantasy, I just don't want the creeps there. But
I thought it was unnecessary. Yeah. Because the Andorians are clearly, I mean, you don't have to say, oh, we want the audience not to like the Andorians, so we'll have to make one creepy. No, you don't like them because they bust in and beat up a bunch of Vulcans, and you like Vulcans. So you don't need the creepy, oh, by the way, I would like to rape you, T'Pol, basically, is what he says.
Yeah.
And so I just thought it was terrible. It was not good.
Well, and also at the end of the episode, is basically like, oh, the Andorians were right and Archer's going to help the Andorians. And we're not going to say anything about the creep that's in their party.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just going to let them go and do their thing. And that apparently isn't important enough to like say anything about or acknowledge in any way. And I'm just like, why is it in the episode? It just it should have been cut.
Yeah, it serves no purpose other than to creep people out. And I just I don't like it.
I agree.
But that, so the ending, if we take out the creepy Andorian, the ending does speak to kind of Archer's character in that he is a little self-righteous, and he's like, he's on the side of the Vulcans, and he's like, clearly the Vulcans won't be lying, there's no listening post, I need to get rid of these Andorians because they're, wrong and they're beating up monks and you shouldn't go around beating up monks. Which generally I agree with, don't go around beating up monks. But if those monks have a secret listening post that they told you they don't have, maybe you can beat them up a little bit. And so Archer immediately switches to the Andorian side, and he's like, hey, Andorians, take a look. There's this listening post. Let's help you get out of here. And you can report
back. It did amuse me that Archer, like, saved the day by punching a Vulcan monk.
Yes, and I think that they picked you know, whatever casting call said, let's look for a suspicious-looking Vulcan. They picked the perfect guy to look like a suspicious-looking Vulcan. And I really like the main master monk guy they meet at first. He looks like the prototypical older Vulcan male. So they did a great job with that casting as well. But yeah, the suspicious Vulcan, right off the bat, you're like, I don't trust that Vulcan. And it turns out you shouldn't. But also, he should learn how to hold a weapon a little better, because apparently he clearly knew about the listening post and he was going to kill them all. But Archer just had to punch him kind of light knee and he got knocked down.
I mean, aren't Vulcans supposed to be like way stronger than humans? Couldn't he have used like the nerve pinch on Archer? Like, it felt like this Vulcan had options and he did not really choose the best option strategically.
Yes, he had many options, right? Because Vulcan is a high gravity world, so Vulcans are much stronger than humans. So there's no reason that Archer should have been able to knock him out and knock the gun out of his hands at the very least so easily. But it services the plot, showing that Archer just wants the truth, no matter who it harms, I guess is his characteristic that they're trying to show in this show. But I don't know. So overall, what did you think of this episode?
You know, overall, I have to say I enjoyed it. Like I said, I think it benefited a little bit from low expectations. but and it didn't, unfortunately, it didn't have enough phlox in it. That would have been good.
Yes.
But there were things I liked. I liked the design of the monastery. I liked that it took place in a Vulcan monastery. I thought that was a really cool bit of world building. Yeah, so overall, I enjoyed it more than I thought I would.
And I liked, I mentioned they use the transporter, and there's a scene where they're basically like, should we use this transporter? I hear it scrambles your molecules, and I think who is, like, Hoshi or Mayweather is randomly operating the transporter, which seems like a bad idea. But
yeah, I can't even remember who it was.
Somebody was.
Yeah. Hoshi is another character who I think isn't really done enough with.
You would think they'd bring Hoshi with them to the Vulcan Monastery since she is their linguist, but apparently they don't take her.
One would think.
It just seems to make sense. I don't know. If you're going to go down to a planet where they're all Vulcans, maybe you want to bring
someone. Then you would have had more than one woman in the main part of the plot, and you can't have that.
What would they do? They could just talk about Captain Archer and how great he is. So as I talk about, the more I talk about this episode, the less I like it, frankly. But I do like, there are some good points to it, and I like the Andorians. Every once in a while, I think the moral of the story is every once in a while, you have to punch a Vulcan.
Yep, absolutely.
I think that's what we've learned. And, well, Carrie, thank you.
That's what I learned from the episode.
It's a very important message to get out to the kids today. Well, Carrie, thank you so much for joining me.
You're welcome. I am, like I said, very happy to be on the podcast. I love talking about Star Trek.
Next on Random Trek, Voyager Season 7, Episode 20, Author.